to the Gateway, your compass through the magical waters, a spirit communication broadcast live from United Public Radio 107.7 FM New Orleans. I'm your host, CL Thomas, and before I get started on tonight's show, I wanted to do a little shout out to one of my friends at Southern Heat Paranormal for sending me this cute t-shirt. Let me see if you can see this. Look at that. It's called Parastash, the Parastash. Check them out at Southern Heat Paranormal. My guest tonight, I was thinking about the solar eclipse and all of that that just happened, and you know, the extraterrestrial realm and all that, and living out here in the desert around Las Vegas, you know, it's everywhere. Aliens are everywhere. My guest, Constance Victoria Briggs, is joining me to discuss her new book, Earth's Galactic History and Its Extraterrestrial Connection. Constance, welcome to the show.
Thank you, CL. Thank you for having me this evening.
You know, I've seen you around social media and everything, and I've always wanted to get a chance to talk to you, and now here it is.
Oh, you have. I didn't know that.
I'm really excited to have you on the show.
Thank you.
So you're an author of several books dealing with extraterrestrials and our connection to them. Let's start with how you got into writing about this topic.
Yeah, you know, I've always had an interest in the cosmos and the idea of there being life in outer space. And, you know, like, you know, most people, I've spent a lot of time thinking about it and wondering, you know, if we're alone in the universe. You know, growing up, I was a big Star Trek fan, a Trekkie. And so one thing led to the other. You know, I had a love for writing. I had a passion for that topic. And, you know, things just kind of fell into place for me. I can say that I started out writing on more metaphysical and spiritual topics. And in that process, I was very happy when these interesting stories, you know, came across my desk about UFOs and stories about people that had encounters with extraterrestrials. And I sort of put that aside while I wrote my spiritual stuff. But now I'm very, very heavy into the galactic history and all of these stories.
Have you had any experiences with UFO activities?
So I have not had anything as extensive as a lot of my associates that I've come across. But yeah, you know, I've had, you know, all my life I've had paranormal experiences. Okay. And whether or not they were extraterrestrial related is a question. You know, because these experiences were with the unseen. And whereas there are many people, you know, for example, I had a kind of an entity in my apartment when I was living single and I was in my 20s and working. And there was something clearly in there bothering me, and I had to seek out help to get rid of this thing, but I never saw it, right? But it had activity. And that paranormal activity that we hear about, people always relate to ghosts, but that's not necessarily the case, okay? Right. So what I've learned in my research about extraterrestrials and my research about there being perhaps other life on Earth that we can't see, because we only have, you know, as a human, we only have a certain range of seeing. There are other things around us, okay? Right. Now, are some of those paranormal activities related to unseen extraterrestrial activity? So to answer your question, you know, I used to consider that some sort of, you know, years and years ago, some sort of spirit or something. But now I know that we can have beings around us that are nowhere near related to life after death.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there are so many, it seems to overlap each other. Yes. So with, when you think in terms of Bigfoot being a spirit animal of some sort or some kind of spirit being instead of a actual physical animal out in the woods, and all these other entities that we talk about, like Bigfoot, fairies, all of this stuff, maybe they're actual spirit beings that are somehow related to extraterrestrial life.
Maybe. And you know, it's all connected. Life is all connected. all over our galaxy. It's all connected. And, you know, we are just beginning to kind of see that. But if you go back to my experiences, so I had that experience. Now, whether, I mean, I haven't had extraterrestrials appear to me in my bedroom, like, you know, some of the stories that I've heard, and even some of the people that I've met, I have not had that kind of an experience. But I do believe that I have spirit guides, and I call them star guides, you know, around me who are helpers, and that are also, you know, giving ideas and kind of visions for my writing. Yes, I do believe that they are there and they're unseen, but I believe that we all have, you know, what some people call them guardian angels, some people call them spirit guides. You know, they're around us, and I refer to mine as star guides. And yeah, so that I have those experiences where I've had warnings in life that I heard, you know, in my inner ear, very clearly warnings and that kind of thing. And I believe that I'm helped with my ideas for my work. As far as the UFO, I had a UFO experience when I was a child, and it just took me, you know, many, many years before I even could call it such a thing. I didn't know what it was until I started this research. I just thought it was, you know, this, I don't know, big thing in the sky that I knew about airplanes and helicopters and blimps at that time. If it wasn't one of those, and it wasn't because it was hovering and it was, you know, had the clear lights revolving and all that. But it took me years to understand or realize that, yeah, that was what I saw one year.
How old were you?
I was about 9, because I mean.
So you were young.
I was young. It was like third grade, but it was, you know, I still, when I'm writing, it was at night. I was in the car in the back seat. My mother was driving. I tell the story all the time now. My mother was driving. She was a nervous driver. I was sitting in the back seat. I wasn't supposed to move or talk or speak or anything. And she could be a little scary when she was nervous. And she was, you know, straight ahead looking, as she should have been, in the dark. And off to my side, there was, you know, this thing in the sky. But I remember thinking, literally, I wonder if that's one of those things. I remember that thought, and I didn't have a word for it. I did not have the word UFO or the, you know,
acronym. Oh, that's interesting. UFO.
Yeah. Yeah, and it wasn't until I started this research, and I was reading about this lady once who had seen this thing hovering, and she didn't know what it was. She didn't know what to make of it. And I thought to myself, well, airplanes and helicopters, they don't hover. And then I went, oh, you know. So, yeah, this thing had revolving lights around it, and it was a circle and all that typical stuff.
Did your mom see it? Did your mom see it?
No. Because we were traveling in the car. We weren't crawling along, you know, but when you're sitting in the back passenger side, you can get a pretty good view. And it is a little bit longer lasting than the driver. She wasn't paying any attention. She was looking straight ahead, and I was looking off to the side where it was. And I just thought, I wonder if it's one of those things. But, you know, it makes me wonder if that area, which is Alexandria, Virginia, / the Arlandria area, for people who live there. I just wonder if that area had been having UFO sightings, because I knew about, I wondered if it was one of those things. I didn't have the word, and my parents were not UFO followers, but I must have heard something that to have even entered my mind. So I wonder if they were seeing things back then. Yeah.
Well, what made you write The Earth's Galactic History, and what exactly is this book about?
Okay. So, you know, I started off in my galactic writing and going on podcasts and things talking about the moon, right? I have The Moon's Galactic History, the Encyclopedia of Moon Mysteries. That's where I started. But people wanted more information that I was talking to. They were asking about, you know, well, say they're like, oh, well, you know, you're telling us about the moon. We know about UFOs on the moon. We know about this stuff going on. But what about Earth? You know, people are seeing UFOs. And I've had people come to me and say, you know, I saw this and I saw that, blah, blah, blah. they wanted information. And there's a lot of, you know, people that are new to this area. I mean, I'm in a kind of a Facebook community where, you know, we talk about this stuff all the time, but the mainstream people do not have any answers. So I wanted to have a book that they could go to that would trace all the way back to as far of humanity's history as we could go for UFO spottings and tales of extraterrestrial contact, and follow that up until our present time. So this book is for those mainstream people and people who are, you know, writing in this genre or who are, you know, experts on this topic. They can still go in there and find some interesting stories that they may not have heard. But so this book traces our history with extraterrestrials, and it shows how Earth has been touched in all areas of our Earth for many, many years by extraterrestrials. It talks about, you know, it goes into our possible human origins and our connections with extraterrestrials. It talks about extraterrestrials in the oceans. Oh, and that, yeah, that is a thing. There's a lot going on with the oceans.
And I have some questions about that too. But yeah, continue.
So I'm just running through the book. I've got signs and signals and messages from them, you know, the cosmic freeway, inner Earth. I talk about experiences people have had. That's pretty much what the book is about.
Are we ready, you think, as a society, of the possibility that we may not be the center of the universe? Well, I think there's enough evidence out there now that we know that we're not the center of the universe, but are we ready to accept that fact?
You know, I get asked this question a lot, and I think we are, I think it may be 60-40. So more people are asking questions these days. About 60% of the people, I think, are asking more questions and are looking outside of their traditional teachings of, you know, whether or not we are the center of the universe. But you still got a great crowd out there that, you know, some are on the fence and some are just like, you know, no way, you know, and they laugh. They laugh if you bring up extraterrestrials and UFOs. But, you know, we are at the point today where, you know, they have to prove now that they don't exist. We have so much evidence. We have so many cameras out there now taking pictures of UFOs. Everyone's got a camera in all parts of the world, right? So there's all of these pictures. I don't know how anyone can laugh at it and say they don't exist, right? So they have to prove that they don't exist, and they can't. But are we ready as a society? So I believe that we have been being educated at least since the 1940s, just, you know, by the powers that be. I think they're slowly trying to educate us. I think that we are not alone. I think that the extraterrestrials themselves have a hand in the information that is getting out. You know, they haven't overtly approached had a mass landing or mass ships in the sky. People see them here and there. And some have had interactions where they have written books and they talked about their conversations and they explained how they looked. But they haven't had that mass contact. And the extraterrestrials, I believe, are waiting to do that until we are ready. You know, there's a lot of people who talk about disclosure and, you know, they want it to happen and they think that the powers that be are preventing it. I kind of feel like the extraterrestrials just may be calling those shots until they feel that we're ready, because they have even said, you know, there are stories about ETs visiting a president and others and said, we're not ready. There was one famous case, you may have heard of it recently, about 2 years ago, where an Israeli gentleman came forward and said, you know, he's a decorated officer and he worked, I guess, in, I don't know, astrophysics or something. And he was old and he was rich and he was educated and he could do whatever, he could say whatever he wanted. And he was there to tell us that we are in contact with extraterrestrials, and he said on Mars, and he said that the extraterrestrials stated that we are not ready to know about them yet and don't say anything, but of course he was saying it anyway, right?
Yeah. That's hilarious. What do you think about, I kind of lost my train of thought there. Are there different species of extraterrestrials out there?
Yeah, that's what's so interesting. And I think that that's what's so confusing to people. Because, you know, when we... Well, I just wanted to get back to your first, the other question. I want to say, yes, we're mostly ready. We're almost there as a society.
Almost.
And with the way that we're carrying on, there has been, I want to say, a group of extraterrestrials known as the Andromedans, who have stated through a representative that they have on Earth, that, you know, if we don't get ourselves together, they're going to have to step in. And they're talking about our wars and the way we treat the planet, that they're going to have to step in, and that the time frame of letting us know that we're not alone in the universe and making kind of mass contact may have to be stepped up because of our actions with the atomic weapons and our mm-hmm. warring and so forth have, according to them, has a domino effect out into the galaxy. So that whole time frame of letting us know whether we are ready or not, maybe even stepped up. So just wanted to say that. Sorry, before I forget. Are there extra different kinds of extraterrestrials? That was the question, right?
Right.
So I think this is where people get confused. When we look in the media, we are seeing gray aliens, right?
Right.
They're gray, or they're green, and they look a lot like, no matter where you look. Every now and then you'll see a humanoid in a piece of writing, but for the most part, that's how people are viewing them. So when you talk about aliens or extraterrestrials, that's their thing, right? But they are not the only ones. And there are several different types of them. So it's looking like, you know, from the research, from the experiencers, from the contactees, from those that have been given information from extraterrestrials, it looks like there are many different types, and that the galaxy is filled with life. And it looks like a lot of them, or if not most of them, may be humanoid, are humanoid. It appears, why would that be? I mean, you know, one of my relatives says, no, if there's extraterrestrials, they have to look different. Well, no, they don't. And they don't, especially if we have the same feeder of humanity, you know, someone that has spread their seeds across the galaxy in hoping to achieve life somewhere, perhaps. You know, we have what is called the panspermia theory, where, you know, the idea is that there were advanced beings that seeded our galaxy and seeded the planets. And they were trying to, you know, just see where intelligent life would grow. And there's also direct panspermia, which is when that was directed towards the Earth, which I kind of think that Earth was possibly terraformed and seeded from, but the beings themselves resembled us. So there's a lot of humanoid beings out there. Some of the extraterrestrials that have been talked about, one very popular group is called the Tall Whites. And these kind of have become popular in the UFO community as stories of them have become more prominent. There was a gentleman by the name of Charles Hall who actually said that he worked with the Tall Whites, and he described them, and he's written books and stories. They are humanoid, very tall, very thin, very frail, with white hair. I wouldn't call it blonde hair. I would call it just a very white hair. And they actually don't do well on Earth as far as living here. They get sick, you know, very quickly. They can get injured. They have to go back to their planet. He talked all about this. This is a thing. People wouldn't believe this, all right? Mainstream people who are going about their everyday lives, going to work and coming home and doing their dinner and doing it all over again, haven't had time to stop and read these kind of reports and do this kind of research, which is why I wrote the book. And I did talk about the different kind of extraterrestrial beings in it. There are many different beings that have been in touch with Earth. Some of them are humanoid and some of them are different.
So kind of like the Star Trek movie, I think it's the second movie where it's the Wrath of Khan, with the project of finding a dead planet to populate. Mm-hmm. So Earth is kind of like, can we think of it as like Noah's Ark actually happened?
So, you know, it's funny you would bring that up. You haven't read my book, but that is in there. I actually love Star Trek, and I also like to use science fiction in my writing because people have they identify with it. It's easy, you know, to understand. So I did talk about the Wrath of Khan, and when they terraformed that planet, right? Mm-hmm. I'm forgetting the question because I'm beginning to ramble a little bit. But what was the question, CL? I'm sorry.
No, it's about Noah's Ark. Is planet Earth kind of like a Noah's Ark where they seeded all of the species that we have on planet Earth today? And it's an interesting concept because when you look at evolution, we're supposed to have evolved from monkeys, right? In a fairly short time period, nonetheless. But yet, in the last couple of 100,000 years, we haven't really evolved a whole lot, have we?
No.
So there has to be more to the story.
I get arguments about that. You sound a lot like me, actually. yeah, I talked about this a little bit. So basically in the book, the scientists are saying, you know, they really don't know how life started on Earth. We have theories, the Big Bang theory. We have the theory that life started in the ocean and crawled out and came, you know, it started evolving and walking. And I keep saying, okay, you're telling me that the bumblebee and the hippo came from the same place, originated from the same place, and they kind of all evolved, you know. I'm not buying it. Yeah. And the scientists have said that the fact that they can't prove, you know, explain where life came from is a problem. They said it's a problem. They only have theories. People want to grab hold to these theories and believe it. Some of them are just lazy with their thinking. They don't want to do the work of research. Mm-hmm. But I think we should be having conversations about it. So could we be like a Noah's Ark? I think so. I think there is a good possibility that a lot of the life was brought here from other places. There is a story that says, there's an account that says that there are about 26 extraterrestrials who had a hand in our, you know, in Earth's creation and life here and in humanity's creation. Yes, I think that they could have brought things here. You know, I live in Southern California. And, you know, it's a desert, right?
Right.
We have all this beautiful greenery here that didn't originate. Okay, that's mm-hmm. how Earth could have been. You know, they could have taken a dead world or a dead planetary body and seeded it. And it would be interesting to think because in Star Trek, that planet that they seeded, eventually everything died, right? And it's, you know, I know this is wild and, you know, I hope the audience doesn't slam me for it, but I think we should think outside the box and, you know, could we be a failed experiment? You know, we blossom, everything here kind of blossoms and then dies. Well, you know, we don't really get old. You know, we're taught from a young age that we become old. But I'm here to say, and I'm not going to say my age, I'm way older than you, but I feel the exact same on the inside. It's the body, the physical body in this world that kind of just starts to go down. We are the same people inside, and we don't have long lifespans. And I just wonder sometimes, is that normal, is that natural, or does something go wrong with an experiment, with them terraforming this place, just like in that movie? Yeah.
It's interesting you say that too, because when you look at some of the oldest accounts like the Bible, there's several other Sanskrit accounts out there as well. When you look at different cultures, they all have a They all have a start that's very similar to like the Adam and Eve story. Every single one of them have a very similar story. And the other thing they all have is that angels exist from a different planet, nonetheless, and they visited Earth very early on to help humanity along the way. You see this like in Egypt, you see this in Greek mythology, you see that it's just everywhere. It's in every culture. Native Americans, when you look at petroglyphs, there's, you know, stories that they tell from beings from other planets that helped them along the way somewhere. We all have pyramids. So there's got to be something that there has to be more to the story, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at.
Absolutely. Yes, you're right. There are tales of star people all over the world. And not only, and yes, you're right, they most of the tales are very similar. So it does look like there's this one account that was, you know, known in our ancient world and spread worldwide. And the story tells us that these star people came and they helped humanity, you know, kind of jumpstart our being a more cultured species, knowing how to you know, farm and build and live, you know, cleanly, mm-hmm. and, you know, and really helped us out. And then for whatever reason, they left. I mean, it seems to me, and my book talks about this, how in our ancient past, extraterrestrial people or star people were here openly interacting with us and relating, you know, to us. And there are stories of, you know, a very intimate, you know, conditions. We have the picture of the cave art of beings with wings, and we've named them angels. You know, we've got a cave art that shows what looks like people in astronaut mm-hmm. suits, you know, and spaceships. And then we also have drawings that look like disc-shaped spaceships, and some of them had gray beings. There's one that had gray beings at the top of the spaceship, and they had a weapon in their hand, and they were running after a herd of cattle, you know. They have all of these different portrayals of beings that were not human, and some of them were humanoid and very, very tall, you know. A lot of the Egyptian writings and art show very tall beings. They were here and they were interacting with us, and some, you know, were giants and they looked different. Some resembled, you know, like the bird-like being. You know, the Egyptians had these different types of gods, what we considered mm-hmm. gods, and humanity thinks that they made them up, but there's a pretty good chance that they were ET beings from other right. worlds that were here.
And the thing is, to your point, I mean, so many cultures have similar gods. I mean, how is that even possible? Like the Vikings, they had their own gods, and the Mayans had gods. They all had their own version of the same thing when you really look at it. Yes. And to your point, like people back then, they lived a lot longer. Like you look at the story of Moses, for instance. Was it Moses? I can't remember which character it was, but he was there. And then he didn't die, though. He was swept up into heaven. Like it was time for him to go, and he was swept away. It's not like he died, though. Like
there were two of them. There were two. There was Elijah and there was Enoch. And Moses didn't see death either. You know, that's the account. He didn't see death. So there were three of them, Elijah, Enoch, and Moses. And then the oldest person in the scripture, the Bible, was Methuselah. I don't know how old he learned to be. He lived to be, I want to say, 900 and something odd years, I think Methuselah lived to be, according to the account. Yeah. Yeah, they lived longer. Some of them are said to have been hybrids, you know, a cross between extraterrestrials and humans. The very famous account is that of the Anunnaki, and it seems to be the account that a lot of people are accepting these days. So the Anunnaki were the Sumerian gods, and they famously, according to the account that Zachariah Sitchin talked about, they came to Earth from a planet named Nibiru, also known as Planet X, and they came to mine for gold, is the story. You may have heard the story. Their atmosphere was dying, and they needed to use gold to repair it. Now, I'm no scientist, but, you know, in my looking into gold, apparently it can be used for some kind of, I don't know, thing or purpose. It is true that, you know, you can use it for other things besides, you know, your wedding ring.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know how to explain it, but the story is that they brought people with them from their world. They were humanoid. Some believe they may have been a reptilians, but there is also thought that Nibiru itself may have a variety of types of extraterrestrials there. But these guys were thought to be humanoid. They came, they brought workers to mine. The workers revolted, and there was a big to-do. And they were told by the authorities from Nibiru, or at least the king or whomever he was, to create a worker race. So that tells us that if the story is true, that just lets us know that there are advanced beings in the universe with the capability to create what we would call life. And it is not something that we ourselves are not working on. Our scientists are working on, you know, creating life and cloning, and I don't even know what the status is these days. They're creating, you know, AI that are very human looking, and who knows where they'll go with that. So the idea is that these beings had that capability. They were told to do it, and they did it according to the account, and that we are the result. They took their DNA and they crossed it with primate that was already here. All right. So that tells you that, you know, even before they got here, there was, you know, if you believe the account, that there were other beings here. But that was what they chose, and they crossed them. And so we didn't look exactly like them, but we looked very, very similar to them. And that's how we came to be. That's the story of the Anunnaki. And their story is very similar to the biblical account, because the first man, it talks about the first man and the first woman being created by the Anunnaki, and that their kids, you know, multiplied. And yeah, so.
It's interesting, though, because, again, you see this in so many different cultures and everything. So obviously there are extraterrestrials on the planet Earth today.
Yeah.
But are there different species of extraterrestrials, and how do we know which ones are extraterrestrials and which ones are not? Or okay. Are we all extraterrestrial?
Well, you know what? If we were created by advanced beings out there, then that would make us, you know, related to extraterrestrials, right? Right. If we do not have our origins from Earth, and the Earth was, you know, terraformed and beings brought here, and even the primates brought here, who knows, that would make us related to extraterrestrials. All right. So I'm forgetting the question again.
Are there different species of extraterrestrials?
Thank you. So basically, yes, I would say so. So we've had strange sightings here of beings. We had something called mantis beings, which was completely shocking. And I just tried to stay away from that as much as I could. But there have been people who have actually said they saw something that looked like a life-size praying mantis. It didn't bother them. It was quiet. but they've said it. And this has happened more than one time in different parts of the world. And I would like to think that everybody's not making up the story. So that's a thing. Could that, you know, that's very interesting. And people have also, you know, made pictures of them. So it's kind of interesting to see them in these. I have several extraterrestrial books. So then you've got also the, people have said they've seen them here, but I do think that they, you know, different extraterrestrial groups are around, but they are remaining hidden. Now they may be these intelligent beings. Maybe I've heard working with our scientists from other worlds, you know, here to maybe try to give humankind upgrades or to help Earth. You know, they've given us, you know, medicines where we thought we created them, but maybe it was the extraterrestrials, you know, here to help. You know, Gene Roddenberry, this is interesting because there's a very famous story about Gene Roddenberry. I tell it all the time because I, you know, I just love Star Trek. But he was said to be sitting in on channeling sessions by a woman by the name of Phyllis Schlemmer, who said she was channeling beings that were in space in Earth's vicinity. And they were different beings in the crew from different worlds. All right. And they were working together. So that crew apparently had different beings from different places, and they could have looked different. And they said they were working with Earth. Some of them could have come down. Some of them could, you know, be here and, you know, in just hiding, invisible. There are rumors about bases of extraterrestrials. Yes, I believe there are different ones here. And when I have read people's accounts of sightings, things that they've seen, like one lady was on a beach and she saw something that she knew was extraterrestrial. He wasn't exactly humanoid. He wasn't exactly gray or a tall white. He was something in between. And then there's a group called the Nordics, who are supposed to be very, also very white, very tall. They're confused with the tall whites. They're not the same group. I wrote about a man who had encountered this humanoid being that looked very much like a Nordic with the long, he said the guy had long hair and he was standing next to a ship. And he was, this man was in the field farming and he saw this, this bird. And then, of course, there are the many people who have said that they've seen the gray. So apparently there's a bunch of them here keeping themselves hidden. And maybe they are under orders, some of them, from some galactic hierarchy out there to not tell us about them or tell us why they're here. And then there are those who have said that, you know, you can be living right next to an extraterrestrial who is here working, who is here doing a job for the Earth or for humanity or for their planet, and we wouldn't know it. Maybe they have, you know, a way of camouflaging themselves or changing themselves, you know, to look like one of us. Now, here's a very interesting story. You know, you can't hear, I mean, you can't believe everything you hear out there, everything you hear on social media, but every now and then, something, you know, catches, you know, might catch your attention. Well, this young man was on social media and he was just beside himself upset because he said he was literally standing in line in a Home Depot. And he saw this man's eyes change. He said the eyes changed and he saw it. And he was, you know, really taken aback. And the guy looked at him and he says, you know what, I just, you know, I don't mean any harm. I'm just trying to make a living here just like everyone else. And he was so distraught, you know, this person who posted this. And I, you know, wow. It kind of reminded me of that woman on the airplane who said she saw something, then recounted, you know, it's not the first time. And I bet you, if you talk to other people, They've seen things. They've seen people out there that didn't look quite right. I know I have. That just didn't fit in and look right. So yeah, I think they're here.
So yeah. Why would they be here, you think, aside from working or carrying on some sort of research for their own planet? Could they be here for other reasons?
Yeah, they could be carrying on research for their own planet, but what is that research? Okay. So it could be different things. I kind of been lately, I've been saying, you know, there that Earth is the strange new world. You know, there could be groups coming here for scientific purposes. They want to study Earth because maybe they'd like to colonize, like we'd like to colonize Mars and the moon. Maybe they need to find somewhere to go. Okay. That could be a thing. And this is just my speculating, right? That could be a thing. Maybe they've got students on a field trip. And said, you know, come on, kids, let's go see, you know, the different planets. Let's see how other species are living. Shh, we can't say anything because we can't let them know we're here.
Let's all go right? Look at those dumb humans down there.
Right, right. So there is this strange antenna in an, I can't remember the name of the ocean now, but I wrote about it. I can't remember the name, but yeah, at the bottom of the ocean, and it's so far down, they have, the military have detected it, and but they don't know what it is. And there is a theory that it's some kind, it looks like an antenna. So who knows who put that there for what purpose, you know, to communicate, because they're here. Somebody said, oh, they're here communicating with each other. And it's out of the way of humans, you know, that we can't get to it because it's too far down. You know, maybe they're here watching us for that reason. Maybe, and this is a very interesting thought, maybe they are in our vicinity to protect us, because this is the thing. There is good and there is bad. And we're going to find that, you know, in our universe, right? Just like on Earth, we're going to find that. And there could be here to protect us because we don't have the technology yet to be able to fend off some otherworldly attack. Okay. Now I've heard stories about what looked like asteroids that were going to hit Earth, even being moved. All right.
I've heard these stories too.
Yeah. I've also heard stories on the flip side of maybe they're trying to protect us from ourselves because they've been known to be near military bases and what have you, and turning off missiles. And they are apparently under some kind of prime directive to not interfere with us, only to a point. They have said they will not let us kill all life on this planet. They would like to see us grow up as a species, but they're not, they're maybe trying to save us from ourselves or save us from killing off all life on the Earth, because maybe, you know, they need it. They could be taking resources also as another thing off of the planet. There have been people that have seen water being taken up into UFOs. That's how many UFOs we're seeing. And there's not just one report of that in our oceans. There are believed to be extraterrestrials living. And then we also have seen water being taken up into ships. As far as, different kinds of extraterrestrials. So it is widely believed these days that there are beings living in our oceans. Now, why would they be in our oceans? Because one of the reasons they would like to avoid humanity, and they have the technology to be able to be deep in there, whereas we can't. And they can do whatever work they need on Earth without the hassle of dealing with these crazy humans with, you know, that might try to do them in. The other thing is they could be aquatic beings of some sort. A lot of people have heard the story of the Nomos that visited the Dogon tribe and gave them advanced information about our solar system that we didn't know about, that we discovered later. Now, those beings, there was a description given from the Dogon people, and it said that they landed and they were aquatic looking and that they could live on Earth and in the ocean. And I just wonder if they ever left, frankly speaking. I know I read that they landed, but I didn't read that they left. Could they be in there? So that's just another type of being that is in the waters. Now, I say that pretty confidently because the Russians declassified some of their UFO documents, a lot of them. And a lot of them were involving USOs, underwater submerged objects, all right? They said the majority of what they encountered were these USOs. And they talked about, and this is a pretty famous account that's been going around for a while now. They talked about some of their Navy personnel who went down there and encountered beings, and they tried to capture them. And then they were thrown out of the water and two of them died. And that was in their declassified accounts, and they've got others. So yeah, that's my
interesting. I have not heard that. So that said, when you think about like old cities like Atlantis, is it possible that maybe that was a submerged city and maybe there was aqua beings living there?
I do believe there are, like I said, aquatic beings down there. Now, they're not aquatic like mer people, all right? These are beings with technology. These are beings that have weaponry, housing, and vehicles, according to that account from that Russian account and another one I have in my book. I can't get into all of them now. There's aquatic beings down there.
So in your book, you talk a little bit about receiving messages and signs from extraterrestrials. What are some of the messages that are being received today in our modern world?
We are not alone. Signs, signals, messages, and clues. That's the name of chapter 6. And so I'm going to share, I guess the easiest ones to talk about are the crop circles, because a lot of people are familiar with crop circles, which I believe now we have to call crop formations, because they are no longer all circular and haven't been for years. So, you know, there are people who believe that these things are a hoax. They're not a hoax. They are the size of several football stadiums long, several that appear overnight. You can't do that anywhere overnight. It was not done by two guys who many years ago came forward and said that they did it because they wanted to keep people out of their farms, and this crop circle was getting too much attention. So they came forward and they never completed that thing. If they said they did it, you know, they were saying, oh, we can do it, let's see. No, they never showed anything. Anyway, it's not a hoax. It's been going on for many, many years. And there have been different countries. I don't think anyone's flying around in an airplane with this elaborate hoax for so long. Okay, so basically, my two favorite, and they are out there, and your audience actually can Google these. crabwood crop circle, C-R-A-B-W-O-O-D. When I first saw it, I thought, oh my God, did somebody, you know, do this, create an art piece? But no, this thing was well researched and documented, and science studied it. So this crop formation had two pieces. One was the head of an extraterrestrial who looked very much like a gray alien, but I kind of don't think it was. There was a little bit of difference there. And then he was next to a disc-shaped object. It looked like a CD, all right? Now, it was decoded. It took a while, but they were able to decode this thing and read the message. And the message said, beware of bringers of false gifts and false promises. I wish I had it in front of me. So anyway, they decoded the message. You can look it up, and I'm going to try really quick before we run out of time, because I should have had it open, guys. Okay, here it is. The message was, beware the bearers of false gifts and their broken promises. Much pain, but still time. There is good out there. We oppose deception. The Crabwood Crop Circle was created on August 16th, 2002. And you can Google that and find it. They, like I said, they even made a documentary of it. They filmed this thing. You know, they don't last forever.
Right.
You know, that was one. And they were trying to give us a message, but we don't know. what the message was. Now, apparently this group that left that message, maybe they can't land on Earth because of the atmosphere. Who knows? All of them who want to come here may not be able to. Maybe, you know, since there are different groups, they are at different levels, even of technology. There was another message called the Arecibo message, which was also in the crop fields. We sent a signal out from Hawaii at the Arecibo Observatory, or use the Arecibo telescope. Anyway, we sent out this information about humanity, gave it the population, how much people at the time were on Earth. You know, it showed our DNA. It talked about, you know, what we're made of, blah, blah, blah. And they expected not to hear anything back. And if they did hear anything back, it would have been something like, I think, you know, a few thousand years. But they got a message back in a few years.
Oh, wow.
And it was in the crop circle. And it looked like the Arecibo message, except for it had their information, this planet's information, and how they were made and how many people were on their planet. And this, you know, science, because it didn't come back the way it was sent, it came back in the form of a crop circle. It hasn't been taken as seriously, or they don't want to, you know, acknowledge it anyway. You can look that up too, guys. The Arecibo, crop circle, or the Arecibo message. It's, you know, it's out there. So that was one, you know, a couple of signals that we have received. There's one famous story where there was an account that we got a signal that was so old. From a race, you know, we deciphered it, and the race had died off by the time we got it because of the amount of time it took to get here.
Oh, wow.
So there's more in there, and they've tried to reach us. I kind of feel like when we first started, we had the Mercury and the Gemini and Mercury missions to the going, you know, the prelude flights before the Apollo missions to the moon. They were seeing UFOs then around Earth. And then in one case, it was Gordon Cooper, who right here on Earth was flying, and he saw a UFO, and then he started picking up a language that was unknown. And, you know, he didn't know what they were saying, and NASA didn't know what they were saying. And I kind of feel like that was a signal and a message they were trying to give us, but mm-hmm. they couldn't. And there's been others. So humanity has had those experiences.
But Constance, I had so many more questions to ask you, but we are out of time. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak to me about your book. Tell us what projects you have lined up currently. Are you doing any events, and where can people find your book?
Wow. Okay. So I don't have any public speaking events in person. I do have a couple of panels lined up that I've been asked to be on. I'm doing a lot of podcasts and YouTube shows and radio, trying to promote this book. And I'm still promoting the moon's galactic history, because I wrote one, you know, I wrote them 2 years, you know, it's been 2 years that I had books coming out. So, but anyway, you can get my books on Amazon, very easy. And you can find me on Facebook if you'd like to follow me. I have a website if you want to ask me questions. It's ConstanceVictoriaBriggs.com. I'm on Instagram now. It's just new. It's just getting up and going. That the handle is @GalacticBriggs. And I post what shows I'm doing on there and what events. So if you know, you can always look there.
Well, Constance, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today.
Thanks
really
for
having you on.
I appreciate you having me.
I just downloaded your book, so I will read it, and I apologize. I haven't read it before doing this interview.
That's okay. Now, should I show it? Here's the book, guys.
I will definitely post the link will be posted too in the comments of the show. So, but you can always, you can find her on social media, and yeah, she's really good. Thank you to the listeners out there who have been supporting this show. I wanted to invite you all to two special events that I have lined up. One is in the West Coast, Virginia City to be exact. It's called the Magical History Weekend at Piper's Opera House, and it's going to be July 12th through the 14th. I'll be there. Look for where to sign up on my Facebook page. My Facebook page is Author C.L. Thomas. The tickets are on sale now online, and they're very reasonable. They're not expensive at all. The other event that I'm doing or a part of takes place on October 5th in Rock Island, Illinois. More information to follow on my social media and website at clthomas.org. You've been listening to The Gateway, your portal to the unexplained, the mystical, and the otherworldly, broadcast live from United Public Radio Network, 107.7 FM New Orleans. Until next time.